CEOs, civic leaders, entertainers, and entrepreneurs. They all have something in common: the drive, vision, and heart to achieve success. Steve Klein is a renowned business consultant, author, and host of Playmakers Talk Show. Each week, he introduces you to fascinating personalities who will inspire, educate, and motivate you to persevere and find your own success. And now, here's Steve Klein.
Peter Drucker said, "The best way to predict the future is to create it." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today are three playmakers who create the future. Our first playmaker worked his way up from a mini clerk to CEO, while our next playmakers are involved with a preschool that increases the developmental skill level of at-risk children by over a year. With us today is the CEO of a medical center that, according to Forbes, is the hospital that Steve Jobs would have built. Well, our next guest's organization provides early childhood education to 560 low-income children in Dallas. His great playmakers are Corey Countryman. Corey is CEO of Walnut Hill Medical Center, and Gail Nave, Executive Director, and Luis Veras, Board Chair of Mi Escuelita. We'll begin today's show with Gail and Luis. As I mentioned, Gail Nave joined Mi Escuelita as Director of Administration in 1999 and was promoted to the position of Executive Director in 2006. Luis Veras serves as Board Chair for Mi Escuelita and is a Pizza Hut franchisee operating stores in the North Dallas area. Mi Escuelita Preschool is a Dallas nonprofit that provides a unique service to low-income families with children considered to be at risk. Mi Escuelita began providing early childhood education to low-income, at-risk children in 1978, serving children ages 2.5 to 5 years. Today, Mi Escuelita has 560 children in 26 classrooms at 6 locations throughout Dallas. Well, Gail and Luis, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, the question I want to begin with, because this is very important, at least in my mind, how did Mi Escuelita begin and why was there a need?
Well, in 1978, one of our founders, Carolyn Strickland, was a kindergarten teacher in the public school system. And she began to realize that the children that were entering kindergarten were not actually prepared to enter kindergarten, and most of the children that she was seeing could not even speak English. And it was back then that she started to notice the growth in the Latino population in Dallas and the need for English intervention. And so Mi Escuelita was formed in the summer of 1978 as a vacation Bible school. And then it opened that fall, serving 20 children, and today it serves about 560.
Prior to 1978, was there anything for Hispanic children that didn't speak English to help them learn?
No, there wasn't. It really was trial by fire for the children. So they walked into kindergarten not even knowing how to say hello.
Well, I want to talk more about that in a moment, but I did notice from some of the information I received that nationwide, one in four Hispanic teens will drop out of high school, and that's compared to 74% of Anglo young adults, and only 57.5% of young Hispanics will go to college. So how is Mi Escuelita dealing with this at an early age so they can stay in school later on?
Well, actually, it's all driven, I hate to say, by the third grade. It's by third grade reading levels. And we know at Mi Escuelita that if they have a command of the English language by the time that they're 5 years old, orally, not written, but if they have a command of the English language by the time they're five, they will pass any reading test in third grade. And that is really instrumental because, unfortunately, that's how the state of Texas determines how many prison beds to build, is reading levels in third grade.
Well, I am jealous of kids that young because I remember my cousin learned French fluently in first grade.
Yep.
And these kids are so – they're like sponges. They learn everything. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it's easy getting these kids to understand English.
It really is. It's 80% of our brain is developed by the time we're 5 years old. And so consequently, if we can teach them a second language, they learn it very quickly and very easily, and they're fluent in it. Unfortunately, I was living in Nebraska at the time, and I took 4 years of German. Ask me how much I use that. And it was a struggle for me in high school because I would always have to translate it in my head. I couldn't just naturally speak German.
You weren't
German.
Thinking in German.
I wasn't. And the children at Mi Escuelita, they think just in their head in English and Spanish. And for the longest time, we had Vietnamese children as well. And so they would learn three languages.
It's amazing how adaptable they are. Well, let me go to Luis just for a moment because you are a franchisee for Pizza Hut, which has really nothing to do specifically with Mi Escuelita. You became involved, I think we were talking before, about 10 years ago, in your board chair now. Why did you get involved with Mi Escuelita?
I am originally from the Dominican Republic, and I speak Spanish. And when I came to this country, even though I didn't come as a child, learning English and adjusting to the culture was important. And when I became a franchisee for Pizza Hut, I thought that the opportunity to get involved and give back was a good one. And Pizza Hut has always been involved with literacy through our Book It program. So this was, for me personally, a noble cause that was dear to my heart, but also as a corporation was something that we have always supported, because literacy for kids is the foundation for our future moving forward.
Absolutely. Is there anything specifically you're doing in your, you have 20-some franchises or in the area. Is there anything that you're doing to promote Mi Escuelita?
We do a number of things, actually. One of the things that we do is we use our box toppers for enrollment so that we can get the word out about not only the opportunity to enroll in Mi Escuelita, but also the partnerships we have with other organizations like KEEP, Knowledge is Power program, that allow us to reach out to communities that are in our stores. In addition to that, we do a lot of fundraising to help the organization. And anything we can do, whether it's providing pizzas for the students or for the teachers, we obviously are always there to support.
We'll do a blatant promo here. Make sure you go to the Pizza Hut locally so that you can help support Mi Escuelita. So go back to Gail. What is your vision for Mi Escuelita in the upcoming years?
Well, we are really focused on growth. There's been a lot of support lately for early childhood education. We all know how important it is. It's challenging for us because the families that we serve, they're the poor or the working poor. They cannot contribute at all to Mi Escuelita. And so consequently, we have to raise a lot of money. But my vision for Mi Escuelita is to grow, because the need is incredible, and especially for what we do, where it's English immersion. We are the only preschool in Dallas that focuses on that. So when we were looking at growth, we knew we couldn't grow. We actually have three programs. We have a federally funded program via Head Start. We have our private program where the parents pay tuition. And about 2 years ago, we stepped into the charter school system via a partnership with KIPP, and this year with Uplift, to provide the early childhood education for them. But we knew we couldn't grow federally because there's a limit on that, as there should be. And then privately, it's difficult because the parents cannot pay too much tuition. So we saw our future kind of in the growth with the charter school systems. And so my vision for Mi Escuelita over the next 5 years, just continue growing in that system and serving more children.
Came up with two questions as you were talking about that. One, you mentioned before that you had some Vietnamese children.
We did.
So this is not limited just to Hispanics. You can have any child who does not speak English will be able to learn language, English. And as you said, they're going to pick up other languages too.
Right. The reason we had a Vietnamese class is we were very fortunate for about 10 or 15 years to have a Vietnamese instructor on staff at Mi Escuelita. And cultures have a tendency to want to go where the teacher is of their culture. And so when Ms. Nguyen retired, the nerve, after 25 years, she retired. When she retired, a lot of our Vietnamese population went with her. And the need in the neighborhood has changed dramatically as well. But any child can come to Mi Escuelita. We've had children from Somalia, and our teachers sit there with an English to Somalian dictionary trying to communicate with the parents. After about 2 weeks, they communicate with the children fine. It's always a challenge of the parents.
And here's the second question, since you mentioned parents. How deep does this go into the family? These children now learning English, they're apparently bringing this home. How is this impacting the parents, and how do you get the parents involved?
Well, the first thing at Mi Escuelita, we want our parents to understand that they are the first and the best teacher the child is ever going to have. That parent is going to be with the child from diapers to diplomas, and it's really important that they understand that. So a couple things happen at Mi Escuelita that are rather unique. The first thing is we have a program called Together We Learn, which was started in 2006, not to promote Pizza Hut again, but with the support of Pizza Hut.
And that's about the time that, Luis, you became involved?
That is correct.
And so that program is, we are English immersion in the classroom. So the children are only exposed to English in the classroom. But at the same time, we will send home for them little, what we like to call homework packets, but trust me, it's not algebra. It's pretty simple things. For the parents to spend probably 10 to 15 minutes each night with their child. And we send it home in the parents' native language, whether it be Spanish, or when we had a Vietnamese class, it was a Vietnamese. And It's the same concepts they're learning in the classroom. And what the child does is he learns them in his native language at home. And two things happen. He remains fluent in his native language. But the beauty of it is parents pick up some basic English because they aren't going to start out reading War and Peace. They're going to start out with the basic, my name is.
This is wonderful for their communication skills, too.
It is. And what it also does is it teaches the parent that they have to be proactive in their child's education. And so we've worked with the Concilio to have them come in and do a parent academy. And that teaches parents this is what a report card looks like at DISD. This is why attendance is important. Really acclimating to the fact that this is the United States and here's what you need to do.
Before we run out of time, I want to ask you about Wings for Dreams, because that's very important. Tell us about that.
Wings for Dreams is we understand that education is all built on relationships and how important a relationship forms with a teacher and a child. And it even happens at the tiny age of four. But what we would like people to do is go to the website of Mi Escuelita, or they can go to wingsfordreams.com and download. I brought one for you, Steve, and download a paper plane. It's free, and on it you can write the name of the person that mentored you the most. With me, it was Mrs. Burnt in high school, who taught me speech and drama and English. And you write her name, and you just think about her, dedicate your plane to them, and then loft it in the air.
So what's that website again?
The website is wingsfordreams.com.
Or miescolita.
Or miescolita. Then upload a video of you flying your plane and post it on your favorite social media with the hashtag wingsfordreams.
That's wonderful. Tell everybody where Mi Escuelita is located, because you have a number of locations.
We do. We are currently in six locations. We'll be at eight in the fall. We are growing a lot. We are in Oak Cliff. We are in far South Dallas, excuse me. I'm going to learn to talk for my children. South Dallas. We are on Ross Avenue in East Dallas. We are at West Dallas in the Good Shepherd Center. We are also at Crossover on Maple Avenue. And the reason that's only five, because right now one building is being finished, and so the children are all at the KIPP location. They will be moved to their new location in January.
One last question for either of you. What can people do that are listening to get involved with Mi Escuelita?
You want to take it, Luis?
Sure. I mean, there are a number of things that you can do to get involved. One of the easiest ways to help is to volunteer and come to read to kids for half an hour during your lunch break. And that way you can make a difference and serve as a role model to the kids that are in the classroom. Another way to get involved is to do a project for one of the schools. Some schools need some painting. Some schools need to get the playground cleaned up. Some schools need to get a bookcase being built. So any way that you can volunteer through projects, that will be excellent. And obviously, another way to volunteer is through fundraising and donation and getting involved in the organization in that capacity.
Well, I'd like to thank both of you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks
for having us.
Gail Nave is the executive director of Mi Escuelita. Luis Veras is the board chair of Mi Escuelita and a franchisee for Pizza Hut. The website, again, is miescuelita.org. Don't go away. We're going to talk, medicine a little bit and hospitals. We're going to talk to CEO of Walnut Hill Medical Center. His name is Corey Countryman. Back with Corey right after this.
Did you know there are more than 6,000 children in foster care in the Dallas-Fort Worth area? And more than 30,000 children in foster care in the state of Texas. These children need to know the love of a family. At Buckner, we find families for children rather than children for families. Our experienced staff is dedicated to walk alongside you every step of the way on your adoption journey. Every child needs and deserves to know the love of a family. November is National Adoption Month. Learn how you can be a family for a child who needs one at beafamily.org or by calling 1-855-264-8783. Be a family with Buckner.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. We're going to talk to healthcare executive Corey Cutterman, who is the chief executive officer of the newly opened Walnut Hill Medical Center in Dallas. Now, Walnut Hill Medical Center is a 100-bed acute care hospital for adults who seek uncompromising patient care from renowned physicians and a compassionate staff. Corey began his career as a registration clerk at Zale Lipschey University Hospital in Dallas after a tour in the U.S. Navy. Over the next two decades, Corey worked in various healthcare management positions, progressing in roles as chief executive officer at Cleveland Regional Medical Center and Weatherford Regional Medical Center. Well, Corey, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Well, my first question to you is, how does a sailor become a healthcare executive, which I think is an interesting story?
Well, a sailor coming out of the Navy and as an enlisted guy, I came back to Dallas and was needing a job and was at a restaurant over on Lemon Avenue one afternoon watching a football game and started talking to the guy next to me who had a management position at a hospital and started asking me what I did for a living, which was nothing. And he told me, well, you have the personality to come be an admitting clerk. So he hired me to be the nighttime admitting clerk at his hospital.
So that was the beginning of your healthcare executive career.
It was. Had he been an attorney, I probably would have gone into another career. So
that was your first year. Did you fall in love with it? Or how did that progress then from there?
I liked it a lot. I liked the patient interaction. I liked the ability to meet with different doctors. It kind of fed my attention deficit disorder, I say. But I began to like the things that could be done for patients and the act of making them feel better, even though you weren't necessarily providing the patient care, but just what I could do for them working in the hospital.
I would think it takes a special person to be in that type of business, period, whether you are a doctor or not.
It does. There's plenty of crying that gets that is involved in the beginning, but you kind of get a thick skin and learn how to deal with it.
Let's talk about medical, Walnut Hill Medical Center, and something I saw, and I believe it was in the Dallas Business Journal, where you made a leap of faith. You joined an organization that wasn't a reality yet.
That is
Talk
right.
about that.
That is correct. When I joined the hospital about 2.5 years ago now, I was the first employee hired. There was no building yet. There was no website. There was no name for that matter. So that was quite a leap of faith to hope that this hospital would ultimately come to fruition. It is a standalone facility, so there's not a multi-billion dollar corporation behind it. A bunch of physicians and some other people that decided that this area needed a new type of new concept of healthcare, and they were going forward with their dream, and I was made that leap of faith to jump on board with them.
Tell everybody where Walnut Hill Medical Center actually is now.
It is actually on the northeast corner of Greenville and Walnut Hill Lanes, 7502 Greenville Avenue.
And the website, by the way, because it is new, is walnuthillmc.com. What sets Walnut Hill Medical Center ahead or different from other hospitals in the area, because it's unique? What are the differences in your hospital compared to some of the others?
Well, historically, a lot of the hospitals are basically a cookie-cutter mentality. You build a building, you bring doctors, patients are going to come there because they need you. This day and age, I think, has changed a lot where patients have a decision that they can make on where to go. They have social media. They have different ways that they can look up hospitals. So we basically stole a lot of ideas, I think is a good way to describe it, from different industries, different companies. We looked outside of a healthcare industry for inspiration. We looked at places like Ritz-Carlton on what makes them successful, talking to people in the parking lot before they even get inside the building, the Apple iStores, knowing the names when the person walks in and treating them differently, Starbucks. Why do people want to go to a coffee shop and spend that kind of money and spend that amount of time for the experience? So we looked outside of our healthcare industry to create a different concept.
I would think being physician owned, that's a whole different culture for your hospital also.
Actually, we're not physician owned. We are physician invested. So the physicians basically,
so there is a difference in that,
there
then.
Is absolutely
okay.
A difference. Physicians, if you were going to take governmental insurance, you cannot be physician owned anymore. So we have physicians that invest in the hospital. I like to describe it as basically like your mortgage company loaning you money to buy your house, and then it's paid back over a set amount of time. So there's no changes in what they make on the hospital based on the volumes. If we have a great year this year, they make the same amount of money. If we have a terrible this year, they get paid back the same amount of money, which is a good thing from my perspective, because the last thing I want are the physicians thinking every time they send a patient to the hospital, the amount of money that they're going to get back in their pocket. So I think it's a great setup.
I mentioned at the very opening of the show that from Forbes magazine, they said that this was the hospital that Steve Jobs would have built. That's an interesting statement. Why did they say that?
Well, we definitely want to leverage mobile technology. We did a lot of looking at the Apple stores, what Steve Jobs created, how we could think differently and outside of the box. You know, our idea is that technology should work for the person and the employee and the staff member, as opposed to we should work around the technology. So everything from iPads for patients to the types of electronic medical records that we have. Those things can be very difficult, the EMRs, that is, for hospitals, but we wanted to make sure that we did everything that we could so that the patient, the family member, the doctor, the staff member all has the technology at their fingertips.
When did you open?
We opened up April 2nd of 2014. I would not open on April 1st, so we opened that Tuesday instead.
I'm very smart. So you're 1.5 years old. Aside from your newness, what is your biggest challenge?
I would say the biggest challenge for us is getting the word out. We do not have millions and millions of dollars for marketing, so we do more of a grassroots campaign. Every person that walks in the hospital needs to be wowed. Every patient needs to have a great experience. Every family member needs to be greeted warmly and welcomed and have great food in our bistro and think that everyone's going to be nice to them and have that experience when they're there. The physicians need to have a great experience. So it's very much a grassroots campaign, and that is definitely our biggest challenge, is not being able to throw another billboard up on Central Expressway every 30 yards like some of our competitors.
You use two words which I love talking about with my clients, which is wow and experience. And I believe in this day and age, years ago it was different, but in this day and age, when you go to a hospital, it's an experience. Anybody can take care of you, but it's that experience, a feeling they have, and being wowed brings them back. How do you do that?
I totally agree. And one of the ways that we do that is hiring the people that have that aptitude for service. You know, a nurse is a nurse, generally speaking, on what their qualifications are. The difference between good care and great care is that customer service experience that your nurse or your caregiver gives you. One of the things that we do is we actually have an aptitude survey, online survey that we do with all of our employees to see what kind of customer service mentality they have. And we have had about 14,000 people apply for our 400 jobs. And there's another article written on the hospital, and it was titled, "The hospital that's more difficult to get into than Harvard." And as a percentage, it's more difficult for the number of people that have applied for our positions to get into our hospital, be selected, than it is to be selected to Harvard Business School.
I was doing the math in my head. That's about 3% of the people applying actually got hired. We're speaking with Corey Countryman. He is the CEO of Walnut Hill Medical Center. 1.5 years old. It's Walnut Hill MC.com. Now, as on your website, one thing that interested me is something called MediGuide. What is that?
MediGuide is a fluoralless system that we use in our electrophysiology procedures. And basically, it's a 3D mapping system, and it allows the patient and the people in the room providing the care to receive less radiation than they would in a standard electrophysiology procedure. It's state-of-the-art. It's cutting-edge, like most of the things that we have in our hospital equipment-wise.
Now, you're talking about wowing and giving the patient experience. What is unique about the actual physical structure? What would they notice when they walk in?
We did design spaces to make people feel better. Again, looking at places like the Ritz-Carlton, the Apple stores, we looked at what would make a patient perhaps heal faster and more quickly in a hospital. 10-foot windows in the patient rooms, lots of natural light.
Feeling expanse.
Absolutely. And, you know, on the intensive care unit, for example, patients oftentimes wake up at weird hours. They've got medicine in their system. They can get symptoms of sundowners, vertigo, anything like that. So these large windows allow for the patient to see a different perspective when they wake up. And we firmly believe things like that, the rich wood throughout the hospital, the wooden floors, things like that are going to give the patient a better healing opportunity.
I haven't been in hospitals very often, so the question I want to ask you is, what causes a person to go to a specific hospital? Is it the hospital itself, or is it the physician?
That is a great question. Historically, I would say the physician would dictate where that patient went. These days, again, with social media, you can compare hospitals' quality scores. That's something we're very proud of. We just won a big quality award, a national award last quarter for our emergency room, the best patient experience for an emergency room in a hospital our size. One other hospital in the Northeast won it with us. So the idea that the patient experience, their friends, where they've been to, the quality scores have a lot of a very large driving factor these days, as opposed to just your doctor tells you where to go. And a lot of doctors are credentialed at multiple hospitals. So our idea is that the doctor will want to choose our hospital and try to drive that patient there as well.
As a 100-bed hospital, my guess is you are smaller and probably more of a niche hospital too, is that correct?
Well, a little bit. The only thing that we don't do is deliver babies. We do everything else that any other hospital would. We've got a very thriving emergency room. We have actually a large volume of patients that come through our emergency room. We basically do everything everybody else does. We just try to be niche in the sense that we provide that outstanding patient experience.
Talking more about you just for a moment, you start out as in admitting. Mm-hmm. You've moved your way up to CEO, so you've experienced that the hospital experience all the way up. And it's with this new hospital, it's almost like being an entrepreneur, seeing it develop. So what advice would you give anybody that's a business owner, an entrepreneur, or even a CEO when they're getting involved with a new venture?
That's a great question. I think one of the most important things, and some of your other guests can attribute to this, is understanding all aspects of your hospital and my situation. You know, the fact that I started at the very bottom level allowed me to see every aspect of the organization. And I remember CEOs that I had in the past that I was scared to death of. They wouldn't look at you. They wouldn't talk to you. And those kind of things are my driving force. But the importance of the entrepreneur to understand all aspects of his business, and just because he or she's in the CEO suite does not mean you can't get out there and walk the halls and be at one or understand your employees.
Well, you start out at Zale Lipschi University Hospital here in Dallas. You also worked, as mentioned, Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get to Cleveland and come back to the North Texas area?
Well, being from North Texas, I'm actually from Kauffman and grew up in Kauffman and Dallas and went to college in Dallas. But, you know, in my profession, you move around a lot. You do, you know, you're generally at a hospital for several years and then you are going to move up either to someplace closer to where you want to be or to a bigger hospital to keep on moving up the ladder. So I was actually in Weatherford as a chief operating officer. Cleveland is chief executive officer, and then it opened back up in Weatherford as chief executive officer. So a decent number of bouncing around. Hopefully that is over. I absolutely love this facility and love Dallas, so I'm exactly where I want to be.
So in a situation like that, do you look for them? Do they find you, or a combination of both?
Combination. You can definitely find them if you're looking, and they'll find you if you fit the criteria.
Now, being Playmakers Talk Show, thinking about your career, were there any big playmaking moves, playmaking ideas that moved you up within hospital administration?
I think it goes back to that leap of faith when you really believe in something. I'm a big believer in, you know, your gut instinct as well. And when something sounds good and it kind of, you know, check off in your mental pros and cons and things work for you, then you're going to have to take a chance. I mean, if you want to settle, then you'll be settled and happy and content. And if you want more, then you're just going to have to make that leap of faith.
Well, tell everybody one more time where you're located and what your website is.
WalnutHillMC.com. We're at 7502 Greenville Avenue at the northeast corner of Walnut Hill Lane and Greenville Avenue.
Well, Corey, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
Corey Countryman, CEO of Walnut Hill Medical Center. This has been a terrific show. Thank you all very much for joining us. And for our guests, Corey Countryman of Walnut Hill Medical Center, also Gail Nave and Luis Veras. Gail's the executive director at Mi Escuelita, and Luis Veras is board chair of Mi Escuelita and franchisee of Pizza Hut. Join us at PlayMakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlayMakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join him again next Friday at 3 p.m. for another sit-down with DFW's most interesting Playmakers.